Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 345. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about small towns and breweries and the most visited U.S. National Park as we go to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in Western North Carolina. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have just two news stories for you. The first one I thought was odd and yet clever, and that is that goats are soon going to be joining the Chicago O'Hare Airport maintenance crew. The idea is that they're going to graze goats on the runways, or at least right next to the runways, to keep the vegetation clear so that there'll be fewer bird strikes, and keep the grass short. So someone's job is going to be the airport shepherd. Interesting work if you're looking for it. And then in an idea that is, I think, one of the worst travel ideas I have ever heard, Hayden Pierce, a Tasmanian businessman, is hoping to turn a 1950s-era morgue of a psychiatric hospital into a hotel near Hobart, Tasmania. What a terrible idea. And no, I don't think I would stay there. For links to both of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Nathan from WanderleyMagazine.com, who's come to talk to us about Smoky Mountain National Park and Western North Carolina. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Happy to be here.
Now, I have never been to Smoky Mountain National Park, and so I was surprised when I learned how popular a park it is.
Well, I think one of the big reasons for that is it's in the middle of the East, so it's so much more populated out here. And the park is really the closest thing that you can get as far as an out west experience. Also, I guess the fact that the park's free, I don't know how many of the national parks are free, but I'm kind of under the impression that the Smokies are the only one. So that was actually a pretty big surprise to me when we showed up and we start driving into it and nobody's asking for any money.
In terms of how many parks, it depends a little bit on how you count it. There are over 350 different parks within the national park system. Some are national parks, some monuments, some seashores and such, but all managed by the National Park Service. And Smoky Mountain National Park, as I understand, is the most visited.
Yeah, when I say national parks, I just mean the actual ones that are labeled national parks.
The big ones, yep.
That's what I'm referring to that. But yeah, they're definitely the most visited. And again, I think that's a testament to just the sheer population out here. And it's a lot easier to take a trip from Florida or maybe up near Pennsylvania in the Northeast down here than it is to head the whole way out west and cross the Great Plains and everything. So,
and for someone like me who is on the West Coast, why should I go to Smoky Mountain National Park? What is great about the Great Smokies?
As far as trying to convince somebody from out west to come out to the Smokies, I mean, the biggest thing I would say is just that this is like the icon of all the parks, and it's worth seeing for sure. But for everybody else from New York City down to Miami, or if you're in the Midwest, it's such a worthy trip just because it's closer to where you're at already, and it's just a unique place, especially if you're in some kind of a trip out here anyway and you're going through the Carolinas. It's a quick stopover right there.
Okay. What itinerary would you recommend for somebody going to Smoky Mountain National Park and to Western North Carolina?
Well, take out your atlas, find the border of Tennessee and North Carolina, which is Tennessee's eastern border and North Carolina's western. All that big green space that they show you on the map there are the Smokies, and then all around it there are these tons of national forests as well. So basically, if you say Charlotte would be the big city to the east in North Carolina, you start heading west on Route I-40, Interstate 40. Or if you're in Nashville, the same thing, but go the other direction.
Okay.
What I would recommend is, so you start in this town called Gatlinburg, which everybody's wild about, and they talk about it all the way, but it reminds me of like a giant beach resort, but far, far away from the beach. Streets are packed, and it's just mind-blowing, especially if you were in the Smokies and you came out and you got into it, you're like, whoa, how did I end up in SeaWorld or something? I think if you start there, especially if you're coming from out west or taking some of the bigger freeways, you'd be starting out there. And that would kind of give you an idea of everything that you're about to not experience. Because Gatlinburg is just a very strange place in this whole area that's very touristy and very different than what the mindset of everything else that's going on, which is really local and about kind of being authentic. There's a lot of Cherokee Indian national history around here and all other kinds of stuff, which I can get into a little later. So you start in Gatlinburg, which is on the west edge of the park. You get that over, get it out of your system, get into the park. And once you're in there, there's this main road that goes right through it. And it takes about maybe 2 hours, an hour and 45 minutes. And while you're driving on that, you can get the immediate experience of what the Smokies are all about, which are big, wide views with this smoke just rolling in. And I think the Indians that originally lived around here, they referred to the clouds and fog that come in as the smoke. And so that's how the Smokies got their name. So you can come up here in, say, September, and you can start driving up. And as you're at the lower elevations, the trees will all be green, and it'll feel like summertime. It'll be hot in the sun, and everything will be, oh, let's have a picnic out on a blanket. And then as you start gaining elevation, it's already fall halfway up these mountains. So the leaves have already changed, and you leave summer, you get into fall all over the course of maybe 10 miles. And then you go even farther, and the tops of the mountains are covered in snow. So right about in that line between where the fall meets the snow, you can live within three seasons all at once. That was the first thing that really impressed me when I got here, was thinking, wow, so go sled riding up here in the afternoon and then go down and have a picnic literally in 20 minutes of driving.
And you mentioned summertime. Is there a time of the year that you would recommend to go to the Smokies?
Yeah, I would certainly recommend right this very moment.
Hmm.
Everybody talks about autumn in New England, and it's certainly beautiful up there, but right in this area, I guess, because I think it's because we're down in the south, but the elevation's high enough that the temperature change is pretty drastic whenever it does happen. So the leaves just get really beautiful around here, and that's not just the Smokies. That's the whole way to Asheville, North Carolina, which is about 80 miles away. Yeah, so definitely right around the beginning of October, but it can last. Since the differences in elevation go from about 2,000 to 7,000, the autumn here can last for two and a half months, just depending on how high up or down you want to go, which I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we had some very beautiful autumns there, but it was like a week, and then it's gone, so you live it up while you can. But here you can just keep changing your elevation and getting more and more into it. So I would definitely recommend now. However, a lot of people are huge fans of the spring. I'm an allergy kind of person, so... Flowers aren't always my favorite thing, but it's a beautiful drive as well. So I guess it's a similar experience to autumn, but instead of leaves changing, you're catching all the wildflowers. And then even in the winter here, though, I mean, I don't know if a lot of people go to the Smokies in the winter or not. We kind of tend to buckle down and keep close to where we live, which is a little farther out east near Asheville. But the temperature here, like last year, it snowed one time, and it laid on the ground for like 3 minutes or something before leaving. So it's kind of one of those places that you get all four seasons, but not a single one of them is very harsh on you.
And you mentioned you could drive the length of the park in about 2.5 hours. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people enjoy the park, is it's fairly accessible. But where would you stop and get out and see something that you can't see from your car?
So there's a place called Cades Cove. So that's a great spot. So you're coming in from Gatlinburg.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming directly from the north. So you come in from the north, and you can start to take this long road, which is called US 441. And that's the main road that goes across the length of the park and takes you from one side to the other, from Tennessee to North Carolina. But right when you first get in the park from Gatlinburg, you can make a right and take another road, which I don't know the name of it or that it has a name. But it takes you to this place called Cades Cove, which is, it's a pretty cool little loop. You can drive around it if you want. It's a maybe a mile or so, maybe a little bit more than that. or you can just walk it. I think they shut down the driving aspect of it for a couple of hours every other day or so, or maybe on the weekends. But you can walk it, you can bike it. So that's a really cool spot to see. To describe it, I mean, I guess it's kind of one of those spots where you're down in a field and there are the mountains rising up all around you. And depending on the season, you get to see some different spectacular view. So that's a pretty cool one. The other drive, which is that US 441 that I told you about, that's the most spectacular. They must have built that because it was the easiest, but it also seems like even from hiking, that's one of the most beautiful because you're riding up and down and along these turns. And you know how you see on the highway, the yellow signs that have like black arrows telling you, oh, the road's turning right or the road's going to get wavy up ahead. Mm-hmm. They have ones on this road that show you doing a loop and you think, well, how could I do an entire loop on a road? But somehow you do, and it's just you end up jumping through tunnels and everything, and you come out of one tunnel, and you're just blasted with a view, and then you come out of another one, and it's on the other side of you something else. And I think a cool thing about it, too, is say you drive through at 10 a.m., you're like, oh, no, man, I'm in one of the smoky days. So you get to the other side, you go find something to do, and then you start coming back through, and it's just totally different because this stuff moves through the mountains relatively quickly, and not to mention that it takes so long to get through it. Coming back, it's just a totally different situation because now all the clouds are gone. You're seeing things from a totally different angle and perspective than you did before. I think if you were staying in the park itself and you drove every day back and forth, you'd probably catch a new view each time just because of the weather.
And then my understanding is right about halfway across, I'm going to actually cross the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, the Appalachian Trail runs right through it. I've hiked a little bit of that here, and it actually connects up to this other trail, which is really cool, called the Mountains to Sea Trail. So what you do is you start up in the Smokies, and you just hike this trail the entire length of North Carolina down to the beach. And the cool thing about that is it's pretty hardcore, even though you're losing elevation, but while you're in the Smokies, you're going down and up and down and up. The thing about these mountains out in the east, they're a little bit different than out west, is they're the second oldest in the world. The Appalachian Mountains. And so they've had so much time to be eroded and worn down that you're never just walking uphill for miles and miles at a time. You walk uphill and then you go back down. So you get these cool up and down breaks. And I mean, I particularly like that. And I know I have a 9-year-old, or no, he's 11 now. I can't even keep up, but he likes to do some hiking with me too. But when we're out west and we just have to go, say in the Grand Canyon, we did that uphill for an entire day. It's kind of disheartening, but here when you can go up and down and just do these balances, it's really cool. From that trail, though, you can start out in the Smokies and start hiking, and it kind of starts to parallel the Blue Ridge Parkway, which is this 490-mile or so road that goes from the Smokies to another national park in Virginia called Shenandoah. So that's really far away, but it's this really cool road that for the entire length of it, I don't think there's a single stop sign. You're just driving on a 2-lane road up and down the mountains, always getting views left and right, going through tunnels and seeing all this cool stuff. You can take that mountain to the Sea Trail, and so you'll get to have the experience of hiking through the Smokies, especially if you want to do like a longer-term thing, like a few days or whatever. And it kind of parallels a lot of the Blue Ridge Parkway, so you walk out there, and then you could just arrange a shuttle if you have multiple cars, or I think they even have services in Cherokee that'll drive you out and drop your car off and bring you back to where you want to start hiking so that your car can just be there when you get done with it.
And you mentioned Cherokee, and we're headed towards Cherokee as we left Gatlinburg.
Yeah, definitely. So Cherokee's on the other side of the park, which is southeast, and it's also on that US 441. So it's the opposite of Gatlinburg, where Gatlinburg's this giant tourism trap, and I use that term lightly because I like some tourism here and there.
That's okay. Once you put in a Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, I think tourist trap works.
Pretty much being the experience of what you're going there to do. That's what I define a tourist trap as. Just like, well, this doesn't really seem like it has anything to do with why I'm here, but let's do it anyway. But anyway, so Cherokee is this really small town, and it's in an Indian reservation, which maybe the name of it is Cherokee Indian Reservation, I'm not sure, but in general, the town's just a lot smaller and easygoing, and where in Gatlinburg, I think it's a little more expensive to stay over there, and you can find cabins over there for like $500 a weekend and stuff that's a little bit over the top, I'd say. In Cherokee, we just went up there last weekend again, and we got a cabin up in the woods just this tiny little two-bedroom, and it had a loft, wood cabin, old school and real handmade and everything. Totally authentic experience, it felt like. But it was like $95 a night, which these days that's what you pay when you pull off on the side of the freeway in the middle of nowhere. So that's what I like about that town. And I guess another thing I'd mention about Cherokee is there's no alcohol on the reservation, so they don't serve alcohol there except for in this big casino they just put up. So whatever the reason that they don't sell alcohol, which I always assume it's some type of moral obligation, I guess once they put the casino in, they said, well, morals are out the door, so get your drinks on and everything there. So then we've gotten into Cherokee. It's a cool little town, too, and it has little parks and things like town parks that you can have a picnic in. Or I think every Friday night in Cherokee, they set up this giant bonfire, and one of the tribal elders or the Indian guys who live there and are still into the doing things the old way and trying to keep around the traditions, they light this big bonfire up, and they're in their full regalia with all their traditional clothing on and everything, and they tell stories and throw stuff in the fire that makes it kind of like explode a little bit. And it's just a really fun experience, especially for kids. But
I say that sounds like something your son would enjoy.
We have an 11-year-old, and then we have a 2-year-old, or almost 2-year-old, and so they both equally get into that kind of stuff. I even get into it. I don't know. I think it's cool. So you hop on the Blue Ridge Parkway, which I'd mentioned is this long road that is just gorgeous. I think people on motorcycles get the biggest kick out of it because it's just winding road going forever. A lot of the times the speed limit's only 35. I don't think it ever goes over 45. And it's just the kind of thing that if you enjoy driving and you enjoy taking like a Sunday drive and looking at things, it's heaven. To me, it's absolutely perfect. I don't know that it's that good for taking a giant RV on or anything, but even people are riding bikes on their bicycles all the time. That's the kind of way you want to experience it. And so what it is every quarter mile or mile, there is a pull-off, the latest pull-off that you get to see. While it's called the Blue Ridge Parkway, the Blue Ridge actually doesn't extend all the way to the Smokies. So from the Smokies to Asheville, you cross a couple of different ranges, including the Smoky Mountains, then the Craggies, and then you get into the Black Mountains. But yeah, you're just pulling off and looking at all these peaks. My particular favorite one is it's called Mount Pisgah. And it's one of those things where you're just driving and you see this mountain that's suspiciously taller than the rest, and it's in a perfect triangle at the top. And it's kind of like a little lost world where you can get to experience some nature that doesn't exist anywhere else. So anyway, you're cruising through all this stuff, and then all of a sudden you finally wind up in Asheville. And if you take the Blue Ridge Parkway, it takes about 2 hours if you go straight and you don't even stop. And it takes about 3 hours if you're a kind of a normal person who just wants to get out and take some pictures, maybe have lunch or whatever. You have to bring your own lunch. There's nothing up there. There are no gas stations or stores of really any kind. So bring whatever you need with you. If you take the freeway from the Smokies to Asheville, it takes an hour and 20 minutes. But if you take this road, it's just a totally different experience. You're not getting anywhere fast. You're just taking your time and enjoying yourself. But anyway, all of a sudden you pop out in Asheville, which is, people had been telling me about Asheville for a long time before we came out here, and it was just always sort of okay, it sounds cool, we'll get there and we'll see what it's like. But it's, I'd almost use the term unique, which I don't try to throw around too regularly, because it's such a tiny city. I mean, it's you could walk the downtown of it in 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes if you're a slow walker. And downtown is what it is. It's just this small little zone, and it's got a few skyscrapers, but I don't even know if they would meet the Wikipedia definition of skyscrapers. They're just 20 stories or whatever, but they look tall compared to everything else. But it's just packed full of everyone from like North Carolina State College fans to punkers and everyone in between. There are tons of religious people, and there's a huge number of churches around here. But at the same time, there are all these old school hippies from back in the day when they were first starting to do that, to young kids who are kind of just couch surfing and playing music on the streets, doing a lot of busking and stuff. So I always appreciate places that are very diverse like that. I think it's a test to a good location. It's not just about any one factor. It's like it has a lot of draw for all these different people. But they have all these cool little shops and stuff, your local boutiques and stuff, where they make everything from screen printed t-shirts to jewelry and all that stuff. But a lot of like tattoo shops and smoke shops and stuff like that I kind of get into just walking around and seeing what the local people are all about. the city has a ton of restaurants, which I think is totally impressive. So our population here, I say are because I'm starting to feel like local here myself. We've been here on and off for about 2 years and keep coming back here pretty regularly. But there are just so many restaurants in it. It's great because they have everything from the food carts that you start seeing in places like Austin and Portland and things like that. And they had to fight really hard to get that. For some reason, the local governments didn't want those around, but now they're starting to take off. So you can get your little Indian tacos or hot dogs or whatever. You have everything from that to high-end tacos, places where you can easily drop your entire vacation budget on a bunch of tiny dishes that are just so good that you want to keep eating them over and over again until you're completely engorged and broke. But the main thing about Asheville that it's kind of becoming known for right now is that it's the brewery capital of America, which, so they have these contests, and I don't know if there's an official brewery voting contest or who does this, but every year they throw out this contest where people get to vote for what they think is the best city for how many breweries it has and what kind of breweries are going on. And so Asheville has beaten Portland now, which Portland has a ridiculously insane number of breweries, but, and it's also an actual city, you know, Portland, Oregon, I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. City where you go there and you're like, oh yeah, I'm in the city. This is huge. And there are probably a million people here. Whereas Asheville has like 30,000 is the population. And once you get out of downtown, it starts to get pretty rural around here, but there are about 15 breweries here. So for those of you who enjoy great IPAs and all kind of eclectic craft brews, you can't really go wrong. You can take a brewery tour bus here. So you hop on it at whatever time, 10 or 12 or whenever you think a good time to start drinking is. And I guess you go as far as you can go. You go to each of these places and you order flights, which a flight is it's like five very small beers. So you get one of each there, of whatever the five beers they're brewing that week or showcasing off that week are.
And I assume that's like $5.
Yeah, it's usually about $5, $5 to $7, depending on the brewery for them. And usually everybody gets their own, but when my girlfriend and I go, we just get one because we're freakishly snobbish about IPAs, so we're really just there to try out the other kinds, but hopefully get more IPA than not. So, but yeah, you do that, and then you hop back on the bus whenever you're ready. You're with a group, so, and the bus is usually actually a van. So you're with a group of 10 people or however many people you can get together, and you all just agree when you want to go to the next place. And
when you came to the region, what surprised you? You came from Pennsylvania, as you mentioned. You're not from North Carolina.
I'm originally from Pennsylvania, but we've been on the road full-time traveling in an RV and then a Volkswagen bus for about 3 years. So we'd come here directly from Oregon. We left Oregon and we kind of hightailed it back out this way with a new baby. We wanted to just kind of be out here closer to family. Mine, as I said, in Pennsylvania, and Renee, my girlfriend's, is down in Florida. So we wanted to come back out this way, and we were looking around for a place to live, and after checking out a bunch of spots, we came here. But the biggest surprise, I think, was when you think about the South, we traveled a lot of the South on our way here. We had started down in Florida originally and came up through it, and it has a certain kind of vibe to it, and it's wonderful, and it's very kind of old-timey and different. But once you get here, it's like this little bubble that there are very few Southern accents. It's a really liberal place, and that's just not common in the South. So attitudes are just a lot more relaxed and less formal, and I was really surprised about that. But at the same time, you kind of get the experience because there are plenty of grits. And
sure, yeah.
You still get a lot of a Southern experience, but it's not as heavy-handed and laid down as thickly as in other places. They talk about Southern hospitality, and everybody around here is really friendly. It was very easy to meet people and hang out, and there's like a pretty healthy couch surfing thing going on around here, which couch surfing is just where you go online, schedule a place to sleep at other people's houses. But I've never actually done that. But a cool thing about couch surfing is you can just connect with people, and the first step in the process is meeting for coffee. And a lot of times people are just interested in doing that. So I think that's a cool testament to the area, because not everywhere, they're not really like that as much. Okay. And so then I guess the other big surprise, like I said, is just getting into the Smokies for free. And how, if they would charge money to get into the park, imagine how much more cash would be in the system, considering that it's the most visited park and everything. But I think that's just a way that maybe it's a marketing thing or whatever, but I think it's a just the way that the government can say, hey, you guys all live out here, check out what we have to offer.
Okay. You mentioned the food scene in the Asheville area. Favorite brewery?
Yeah, so my favorite brewery in Asheville itself, downtown Asheville, is called The Wedge. And it is in a place called the River Arts District, which is just a little, it's a little neighborhood. I mean, not a lot of people live there, but it's a section of town which is along the river. And they started, used to be kind of industrial, I guess, way back when. But now there are a bunch of artist galleries down there and stuff, and you can go check them out. They're more like the funky kind of artists, like not really the fine arts crowd. People who think it's fun to draw models that are following a fire hydrant or whatever, and cool stuff like that. Walk around down there, and then you eventually come to the Wedge Brewery, which they have a few beers that they make. I think they usually have about 5 on tap that they're making at the moment. And you walk out into this back parking lot area where they have this big van parked up, and they show old black and white movies on the side of it from a projector. You can sit there and watch and talk, and it's not like a movie theater where everybody's quiet and it's just sort of hanging out, having fun. So that's the coolest one in downtown Asheville. Now there's this other place called Pisgah Brewery, which it's my favorite brewery around here, and it's also my favorite IPA that I've ever had. And it is in a town called Black Mountain, which is kind of a suburb of Asheville. It's its own place, but it's 17 minutes outside of the city to the east. And the cool thing about that place is, so they have their brewery and they have a tap room and you can hang out in there. And a lot of times there's free music during the week, but they have kind of bigger bands, like a lot of the bands that come around here are Americana or kind of hippie-ish. So they have like the Jerry Garcia band will come through here and stuff. And so they're kind of big shows, and you go out back in this giant field and they have local vendors and little food carts selling food, and you can buy your beers back there. And they don't up the price just because you're at a show. It's the same price, like $3 to $7 or whatever, depending on the type. And you sit out there and have fun, and people's kids are running around and dogs are running around. It's a very laid back kind of atmosphere. So that's what I'd say as far as a favorite brewery, for sure.
Okay. And any place that has a big brewery culture has a big food culture, in my experience. Favorite restaurant?
Yeah, right. So there are so many restaurants, you almost can't go wrong, but there's this place called Mayfield, and it's right in the heart of downtown. And you go in there, and inside it's all funky. They've got all these like old school tea kettles and spatulas and whatnot hanging on the walls. So it's just got this cool little feel when you're inside. But there are two things about it that I particularly love. One is they have a Bloody Mary bar, which you make your own Bloody Mary, which I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. I mean, it feels like combining Legos, and I just thought that was really fun. And it's pretty laid back around here. Like, if you have kids and stuff, nobody really is judging you or anything, which sometimes you can get that thing going on in certain places. But so anyway, yeah, the Bloody Mary bar is cool. And then on the back porch, they have this really cool zone where you're kind of like tucked into the side of as the mountain goes up, this big cement wall or brick wall goes up to your side, and you're down in it. And then there are these, it's like a fire escape worth of stairs that go up to the next level, the street above. And so you're just kind of down and tucked down in this little place. You can hang out on couches or chairs. There's an outside bar, but it's just a really great place to hang out with friends and kind of be alone, but feel like you're really in this giant city that's really bustling because people are all going by up above you and everything. So that's one of my favorite places. And then another place is, it's also a brewery, but they serve pizza. It's called Asheville Brewing Company. And the cool thing about that spot is you go there and you get a pizza and you take it out on this back deck. And once again, they have these, they're always showing like weird movies like Edward Scissorhands or something. Just fun stuff where you can just sit around and talk and catch a movie or whatever. And then they have this great deal, which I think is a really interesting thing. On certain nights of the week, whatever hour you get there is how much your pizza costs. So if you buy a pizza at 7, it's $7. And if you buy it at midnight, it's $12. Oh, which I just think it's a fun way to, I guess, try to get you out early.
Now, I want to go back a little bit to Gatlinburg, which you described as a tourist trap. We already mentioned Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum. But I get the impression you like Gatlinburg.
My girlfriend doesn't like it. She hates it. Stuff is horrible, and she doesn't want to be in it. And it is. It's a lot. The streets are packed, and drive through it is maybe the town's a mile and a half wide. That's 45 minutes of driving. It's nuts in many ways, and it's just very different from what you expect when you go to a national park. However, there are definitely a lot of cool things about it. There's this one place I like. I think it's called the Smoky Mountain Brewery, and I mean, there's a recurring theme here, but it's not all about drinking. You know, these places are always like, they're multifaceted establishments. And this one in particular has all these screens hanging around. And I guess I talk a lot about movies and stuff because we don't have TV and we don't have it in the houses we rent or in our RV and stuff when we're traveling. So this place has all these screens hanging around where you can watch football and everything. And so if you're at a sports bar in Pittsburgh or you're watching a game with your friends in whatever city you live in, everybody's on your side and everybody wants your team to win. So that's just the way that is. But when you're at a tourist place like this and there are 10 TVs with 5 games going on and everybody's from all over the country, it just makes this really cool vibe. And while you're just having lunch, I mean, you're there to eat. It's very unusual to be having conversations with a table across the room whenever you're at a restaurant. So I think that was a really cool experience, just getting to interact with people and kind of have fun with sports and stuff and do that sort of thing. But then another thing they're going out there as far as food are, they're called Indian tacos. And I didn't know what to expect the first time I had one, but basically there's this stuff called fried bread.
Mm-hmm.
It lays on the plate and then on top of it is everything you would expect to see in a taco. So I don't know if this is some kind of traditional food or if it's the fried bread is a traditional Cherokee Indian thing. And then they thought, well, everybody loves Mexican food, so let's throw that on top. But they're real big about that. And I think it's a pretty interesting thing to check out. But other than that, I don't know what else you would say about Gatlinburg. Most of the restaurants are chains. And if you've been anywhere, you've been there.
All right. We're going to start to wind this down. Before I start getting to my last questions, any other last tips about Smoky Mountain National Park or Western North Carolina?
Yeah, well, just a couple of tips I would just mention real quickly. If you want to look into what's going on with hiking in the Smokies, there are so many trails that it can get a little overwhelming. But if you go to this website called hikinginthesmokies.com, and Smokies is spelled just S-M-O-K-Y-S, they spell it weird. I don't know who runs that website. It's kind of old school looking, but it has just ridiculous amounts of information on how hard everything is, where it's at. And that, I use that all the time. I mean, it's better than even the maps. Not that you don't want to have a map, of course, but it's so easy to find a place that'll be perfect for you, your particular fitness level. The main thing I would say also about Asheville too, is there's just a lot of people talk about this place called the Biltmore, which is a mansion. This gentleman, his last name was Vanderbilt. He made a huge fortune on many things. He owned everything back in his day. And he built this ridiculous home that's just so big. And everybody talks about going there and how great it is. And I guess it's okay, but still the same family owns it today. So essentially you're paying people with quite a bit of money for the privilege of seeing how much money they have. And something about that irks me. So people always talk about this, but there's this other really cool spot called it's called the Grove Park Inn, and it's just north of downtown Asheville. And it is, in my opinion, ridiculously more beautiful. It's this giant stone hotel with this roof on it that it looks like Spanish tile, but it's all like molded and curved around the building to almost look like if the Smurfs built a luxury condo somewhere, it would look like that. The roof looks like a little mushroom top on it. And each stone is the size of the average American's actual house. There are these massive rocks that you wonder how back in the day they could lift those up. And you can go up there it's totally free to get in. You can walk around. You can get some food up there, which is probably pretty pricey. We've never eaten there. But as you walk out into the back of this place, you get a huge view of in the very background, there are just the mountains. And whenever they talk about Purple Mountain Majesty, I mean, these mountains, they look purple for whatever reason. I guess it's like the haziness or whatever around here. They look just like layers and layers of purple, maybe 7 layers of mountains you can see. And then right in the middle of it all is Asheville just rising up out of the forest. So I think that's kind of like a cool tip to tell people, especially if you don't want to drop $100 or $200 on yourself or your family getting into this, into the Biltmore. You can go up there for free and I think have the same experience.
Question for you. You're standing in the prettiest spot in all the places we've talked about so far. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Right in the heart of the Smoky Mountains is this place called Clingman's Dome. And it's kind of got a little bit of an interesting backstory, which I can get into in a moment. But But what happens is you pull up, you can drive up this road, and that's the road where we first saw that. You go from summer to autumn to winter as you get to the top of it. And so we're up there, and it's snowing, and it's very strange. It's like the end of September or something, and it's snowing, and we hadn't seen snow for a long time, actually. So then you take this short hike to the top of it, and you go up this stone spiral, and you get to the top of this spiral, and it's just an observation deck. And from there, you can see – well, I know for a fact you can see 80 miles to Mount Mitchell, which Mount Mitchell is the tallest mountain in the east. It's almost 7,000 feet. And then this Klingman's Dome is the second tallest. So just the view is just incredibly expansive. And from there, especially on a day when it's snowing up there, I mean, the effect of seeing snow to autumn to green, it's one of those kind of cliches, but you're looking at a painting. So it's very gorgeous. Just real quick on the background on that. So Klingman and Mitchell were two explorers here back in the day, or not even explorers. They were surveyors. There was a race to find the tallest mountains. They used to think it was up in New Hampshire, and then somebody down here said, no, there's no way that the North could have a taller mountain than the South. We're so much better. So they started surveying all this stuff. And this Mitchell guy, he's kind of a second-rate surveyor compared to Klingman, because Klingman was the real deal. He was very fastidious about everything he did and very serious, and Mitchell was more just looking for fame and glory. And so what ended up happening is Mitchell discovered the second highest mountain, and Klingman discovered the first, and there were a bunch of debates about it and whatnot going on, but then Mitchell died hiking through the mountains. He fell off the edge of a cliff and died. And so everybody felt so bad for him that they ignored all the facts and said, no, his mountain was the tallest, so we'll call that tall mountain his, and then we'll call his mountain yours. And I like that kind of a story that says, forget the fact going on what the people, I guess that's democracy. The people can vote for facts.
Last two questions. I think you know what these are. How about you really know you're in Asheville when what?
You really know you're in Asheville when you're surrounded by dancing hippies all around you, and there's a giant concert going on in the middle of the street that's pouring out into the first lane. So there's so much traffic backed up and they're beeping and nobody even cares. Everyone's having a great time. And basically the road becomes a one lane road and you have to start making your own way.
And if you had to summarize Western North Carolina and the Smokies in three words, what three words would you use?
Yeah, I think I'd say colorful green triangles, because that's just what it is. Everywhere you're going, you pop out to these new mountain peaks that each one just seems a little more impressive than the last one.
Excellent. Well, Nathan, thanks for coming on the show and telling us about North Carolina, Western North Carolina. Where can people read more about your travels?
You can check us out on wanderlymagazine.com, which is spelled wanderlymagazine.com. That's our main outlet right there, and we'd love to have you over there.
Thank you much for coming on the Amateur Traveler.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate it.
In news of the community, I heard a little while back from Bjarne, I'm going to say, B-J-A-R-N-E, who posted on the Amateur Traveler podcast wall on Facebook, thanks for the last long podcast. I'm listening to the podcast while driving, and sometimes I forget to take the right turn. 1 hour podcasts are no problems. I can always do a longer route. Glad you're enjoying the show, but I'm sorry that I'm getting you lost. And then also a while ago, I heard from Miranda, who said, "Hi, Chris, my husband and I just returned from a 2.5-week trip to France, and your podcast on the Champagne region of France helped us tremendously. We were very eager to explore the Champagne/wine region, and after listening to your podcast, we were hooked. We visited the Drapier Champagnery and loved it. The Drapier family were very hospitable, and their champagne is delectable. Before the trip, we contacted Drapier about a tour, and they suggested we simply show up for a wine tasting. We arrived at about 2 p.m. for a tasting and were surprised to find that, one, it was free, two, it was a private tasting as we were the only ones there at the time. They told us there would be a tour at 4 p.m., so we had a little picnic in our car, and lo and behold, about 40 people showed up for a tour at 4 p.m., and they were just as shocked as we were. So while we didn't have all the information from the get-go, we were pleasantly surprised with the end result. The family, husband, wife, grandfather, ran the tours and gave us a touch of French hospitality. We have continued to exchange emails with them over where we can purchase their champagne in the U.S. One thing that surprised me about the Champagne region, as well as Burgundy, where we stayed and did a wine tour, is that it is not at all like Napa or Sonoma. I thought we could drive around and just walk into a winery, but that is simply not the case. Since most of these wineries were family-run, you either need a guide or need to make a reservation beforehand. All in all, we love listening to the podcast, as your 30-minute episodes are the same length as my commute to work, as well as the length it takes to walk my Basset Hound mile. Thanks for all you do, Miranda and Aaron. And then Miranda left a PS. During our trip, we also spent 3 days in Amsterdam, but noticed you have not done a podcast there. What's the holdup? I need a guest. Anybody want to volunteer to be a guest who is an expert, or at least who can speak knowledgeably about Amsterdam? Let me know. And that's true really about a lot of destinations. You may notice that a lot of our guests come from listeners in the show. So if you know a destination well enough to tell people how to get around and what they should see, let me know. Check out the map, amateurtraveler.com/map, to see where we've already covered. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email like Miranda did, leave a comment on the Facebook page like Bjorn did, or better yet, leave a comment on the episode so that everyone can see it. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X, and if the podcast awards are up and The Amateur Traveler is there, please do vote for us, or leave a review on iTunes so other people can discover the show. Thanks so much for listening.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.